This is the Trenches Technology Podcast with your host, Sharon Bueno, Managing Editor of Trenches Technology Magazine. Welcome, everyone. Today on the podcast, we are talking about something that is getting a ton of headlines and conversation of late: undergrounding power transmission and distribution lines. Ever since mega utility PG&E announced in July that it plans to relocate some 10,000 miles of its power lines underground over the next decade, it's been a hot topic in construction circles, especially horizontal directional drilling circles. Undergrounding power lines has been a part of the HDD landscape for many years, but has not garnered a lot of spotlight as they've typically been smaller sized projects. But that is changing. Large such projects are now being done and currently underway, and more on the horizon. Side note, the 2021 Trenchless Technology Project of the Year for New Installation winner was a significant project involving undergrounding power lines in Virginia, owned by Dominion Energy Virginia. With PG&E's plans bringing that spotlight to this type of application, we had some questions about the process and future of undergrounding power transmission and distribution lines. This shift in thinking by the major utilities is huge in terms of where they are spending their money. This will be in the billions of dollars, and their acceptance that this is just a better long-term solution to keeping their customers connected after natural disasters such as wildfires, hurricanes, and tornadoes. Talking to me about this issue of converting overhead lines to underground in strategic areas is Mike Beeler, spokesman for the Power Delivery Intelligence Initiative, an advocacy group for undergrounding power lines. Mike has nearly 40 years of electric transmission and distribution experience at Tucson Electric Power, Hawaiian Electric Company, and the engineering firm Burns & McDonnell. He is educated as a civil and structural engineer and is a registered professional engineer in 8 states. So there's lots to talk about with Mike, and here's my conversation with Mike Beeler. Hey, Mike. Welcome to the Trenches Technology Podcast.
Thanks, Sharon. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah. With all the talk out there now, with the undergrounding of power lines the last few months, we've been hearing a lot of that in the industry. I thought this would be a great time to pop on and do a podcast regarding undergrounding power lines. So this is a timely podcast for sure. My first question is just, what was your general reaction to PG&E's news about undergrounding some 10,000 miles over the next decade or so?
Well, Sharon, you're right. It is a great time to talk about underground. And that PG&E announcement this past summer was a big deal. So when they say they're going to spend $15 to $30 billion undergrounding their T&D assets, and just 10% of their system over the course of the next few years, and when Patty Poppe, the CEO, comes out and says it's too expensive not to do it, it really is exciting. And there's going to be some huge opportunities and advancements for technology. We're going to learn a lot as an industry with regard to economies of scale, because they're going to do only 10% of their system, but that is going to amount to be, you know, 10,000 plus miles of transmission line and mostly distribution line undergrounding. So we as an industry are going to learn a lot, but certainly PG&E needs to do something different, right? They need to have a new paradigm at PG&E. The old leadership did not necessarily agree with undergrounding as a long-term solution to some of the challenges that face PG&E with the things that are happening with the wildfires in particular. Their public safety power shutoffs are just incredulous that in a developed nation that you would shut power off at the very time when people need power the most, when there's a critical situation like a wildfire enclosing upon your community. And, well, we're going to shut your power off because we don't want to cause any further fires. That's just not a credible long-term solution. I think the new management at PG&E has recognized that. And I think we're going to see that theory is going to sweep across the country. We've seen some things happening on the East Coast. Now on the West Coast, we're going to watch that, and we'll watch East versus meet West, and we'll see some things happen all over the United States and North America.
You alluded to my next question, actually. With the program of this size that they're planning, what does this tell you about the future of underground power line installation?
Well, that's a great question too, Sharon. And I think we're going to learn a lot more with undergrounding. Again, we're going to, the RFI, the request for information that Pacific Gas and Electric put on the street, said very specifically that they want new innovation. They want new advancements, emerging technologies to be brought to bear. And we know that material science is always changing and improving, especially with regard to the makeup of conductors and cables. We know that engineering tools are improving. You look at 3D design, for example, augmented and virtual reality. You look at construction methods. We're going to start to employ some really great advanced and fast construction methods. Trenchless technology, I'm sure, will be part of that. Mm-hmm. in this huge initiative at PG&E alone. And then the O&M, the operations and the maintenance technologies, are improving as well. So this is the 21st century. We're mm-hmm. not going to design it the way we did back in the 50s and 60s. It will not be your grandfather's distribution system. It'll be a new and vibrant and long-lasting asset that's going to serve customers and really all stakeholders, including regulators and shareholders alike, are going to serve them for decades to come.
This project definitely put undergrounding power lines in people's tunnel vision, kind of. I mean, they're talking about it, but undergrounding power lines has been a part of the horizontal directional drilling market for years. So the concept of installing transmission and distribution lines in this manner isn't new to the trenchless industry. And obviously wildfires, hurricanes, and tornadoes, they're not new. But what has changed is that the owners, such as PG&E and other utilities, are exploring this option. What has changed for them in this regard?
I think that the need for resiliency has really risen in the industry. Resiliency is defined as the ability to withstand a high impact but low probability event with little or no customer impact. And so we see wildfires that wipe out entire communities in California and in the mm-hmm. western United States. We see a hurricane that comes into New Orleans and wipes out all 8 transmission lines that serve the city of New Orleans for up to 3 weeks at a period, at a time. We look at Puerto Rico, and Hurricane Maria hit Puerto Rico, wiped out Puerto Rico back in 2017. Mm-hmm. And we realize that we've got to do something different, and we need to put these overhead transmission and distribution lines underground in the name of resiliency. And so what has changed is that the advent and the intensity of these events seem to be coming harder and faster at us. And we realize that having good reliability is one thing, but having the ability to withstand that high impact, low probability event is important. And it's important not only to customers, but to the regulators of these utilities as well. And ultimately even to the shareholder, because how many times does a utility need to go back and replace assets in kind over mm-hmm. and over and over again? And that's a fundamental question that we need to ask ourselves.
Well, long-term, HGD obviously will benefit from these type of projects, particularly in Northern California with PG&E, with that rugged terrain they're talking about putting these lines in. But what has been HGD's role in undergrounding over the years versus what perhaps it will be in the future to this movement?
Well, so that's a great question too, Sharon, because directional drilling has had a role when you were doing railroad crossings, freeway mm-hmm. crossings, big river crossings. There was large-scale directional drilling. There was small-scale directional drilling. A lot of the 5G network was put in, obviously, with mid-size and small rigs. What we're going to see, I think, is there will be some advancements, I believe, in the equipment that's used in HGD in the future. But I think the scale of the amount of opportunity for contractors in the trenchless world is going to be tremendous. I know in other parts of the industry, it's not a question of, is the work there to do? It's a question of, do I have the manpower to even mm-hmm. do the design? Can I get the labor and the equipment? Supply chain challenges right now on materials are very challenging. And so can I get the material and the construction equipment and the construction labor and all the things that go with it, scheduling and safety personnel and the design resources, will it be adequate? across the board in undergrounding, but you know, very specifically, you asked about directional drilling and very specifically for directional drilling. So it's going to be a huge opportunity. It's going to be very exciting. We see what's happening with strategic undergrounding on the east. We see what's happening with what Pacific Gas and Electric is doing. There are going to be other utilities that are starting to take significant notice of this, and they will start their own undergrounding programs as well. And it'll be up to contractors and equipment manufacturers to keep up, which is a great opportunity to have.
Beyond HGD, what vendors and suppliers stand to benefit from utilities turning to underground? Not specific names of companies, but the type of work they do. Where do you see those companies benefiting?
Well, I think an EPC contractor, engineer, procure, construct. I think EPC contractors have got great opportunity. I think architectural engineering firms have great opportunity to design some of these underground programs, or even to manage the program. They're going to be programmatic. They're going to be so big that no single contractor, no single AE firm can do all the construction or all the engineering. So there'll be a role for program managers. There'll be great roles for contractors, small and mid-sized, diverse contractors. You know, it'll be a great opportunity for small minority businesses to get engaged in this business as well. People that make cable and conduit and splices and terminations, and people that make equipment, construction equipment, they're all going to see a great opportunity in the years to come as we convert, not across the board, but over a period of years. I mean, this is going to be a long-term opportunity as we convert overhead transmission and mostly distribution to underground. And I'd say the opportunity is going to be very broad. Men and women that can get involved in public engagement and interfacing with utilities customers about where the right of way is going to go and what permission they have to enter and exit. These are all going to be things that need to be done, and they will need to be staffed in the years to come.
You're obviously a very enthusiastic proponent of undergrounding pipe, or excuse me, let me start over. You're obviously a very enthusiastic proponent of undergrounding power lines. How did you get involved in this sector in construction? What's your background?
Well, that's a great question, and I am pretty enthusiastic about it. So, I'm a degreed civil engineer, and I started my career at Tucson Electric Power Company, building high voltage transmission lines for the most part overhead. But I grew up in Tucson, and I did have an opportunity to put some of the distribution system underground. And I like that. I think that, you know, you live in a beautiful place like Tucson, Arizona. You got a great view of the mountains. I want to see the mountains. I want to put the electric system underground. So I always appreciated that. Then I had an opportunity to go to the Hawaiian Electric Company in Honolulu. Again, I was hired as a transmission engineer, but my charge there was very specific. There's an overhead and underground transmission line. And we got involved in working with EPRI, the Electric Power Research Institute, on some tailored collaboration to use mid-sized drill rigs to put pretty good size, you know, holes in the ground with directional drilling to draw a series of conduits that we're going to put a transmission line in. So got involved in that. Subsequently, the Beeler family couldn't afford the price of paradise, and so we needed to move from beautiful Honolulu, Hawaii, to Kansas City. I took a job with Burns & McDonnell. And Burns & McDonnell is a big AE firm, big EPC contractor. I worked there for almost 25 years and have always been interested in new and emerging technologies, had the opportunity to do overhead and underground design, but really worked on more strategic things in the latter part of my career. Retired a couple of years ago from Burns & McDonnell, and as a retiree, I still am involved in the industry and get to do the things that I am most passionate about. And I am very interested, and I think that there's a great need in this country to rebuild the transmission, but mostly the distribution system, and put it underground. And so in working with the Power Delivery Intelligence Initiative, which is a group of contractors and vendors and consultants that advocate for the consideration of underground, I've been able to do that for the past year or so, And we have started to move the needle on people paying attention to and looking at and evaluating underground versus overhead transmission and distribution.
Well, you started there explaining a little bit about what PDI Squared does. Maybe go into a little more detail of what it's about and what you do, and maybe explain what the mission objectives are.
I appreciate that. Thank you. The Power Delivery Intelligence Initiative, we like to call PDI Squared, is a group of contractors and consultants and equipment manufacturers and O&M contractors that advocate for a good, solid evaluation of underground versus overhead. So many times a planner or an engineer will say, well, we've got to build this transmission line or this distribution asset, and they seem to think, and they have in years and decades past, they seem to just think overhead. And what we're advocating is look at the underground options as well. We believe, and we have advocated, that the total cost of ownership or the life cycle cost of underground versus overhead is really at parity. I mean, they're very, very close. Maybe the capital cost is higher, but when you look at the need to replace a car hit pole or a lightning damaged pole or a pole that comes down or wires that come down because of ice and wind and storms like Maria or Ida or Isaias or, you know, all these storms that hit various parts of the country, the cost over the life of the asset actually is something that I don't believe we as an industry in years past have well accounted for. And PDI Squared is a resource really for planners and engineers and other stakeholders to go to look at the resources. There are webinars there. There are podcasts like this there, Sharon. There are videos. There are white papers. Lots of resources for people to go to and say, I want to know a little bit more about underground. I've been hearing that the cost of underground and the life cycle cost of underground is coming down, but I need some empirical data on that. And where do I find that? And PDISquared.org is a website that's a resource for that.
Among the owner's reasons for not pursuing undergrounding their power lines over the years is that it's too cost prohibitive. They can't justify spending all that money to put everything underground. What's your general reaction to that argument?
Yeah, so my general reaction is exactly what Patty Poppe, the new CEO of Pacific Gas and Electric, said. Why is she the new CEO? Because the old senior executives basically were asked to find another job because PG&E for years ignored underground as a solution. They decided to do it the same old way, and they did, and they were in an intense fire area. They don't manage the vegetation. It's hot, it's dry, it's windy, and transmission lines and distribution lines are electromechanical devices, and they cause sparks occasionally, and they cause fires, and they burned down a couple of communities. They killed 30 people, and they forced the company into bankruptcy. And they said, you know what, we got to change the way we're doing things. And so Patty Poppe comes along as the new CEO, and she says, it's too expensive not to do underground. I mean, it cost us bankruptcy at the company. And so we're seeing people pay attention to that. When PG&E makes a move like that, others in California are taking notice. Others in the Western United States, the Portland Generals, the Pacific Cores, the XL Energies of the world, they take notice. And they all have fire prevention programs, and they're all looking at undergrounding as an alternative. Furthermore, reliability has always been a big issue in the industry. And some utilities on the East Coast went to their regulators and they said, we want to improve reliability. And the regulator said, you know, your reliability is already pretty good as a standard in the country. Reliability is about 99.97% reliable across the country for the electric grid. But that reliability number does not include the high impact, low probability events. Mm-hmm. And more of those are coming. They're coming harder and they're coming faster. So now regulators said, I'm not so much worried about reliability, but I want you to recover from these storms faster. Mm-hmm. I want to get, instead of a 5 or 7 day time of restoration after the next big hurricane or ice storm, I want you back in 3 days. That's 3 days less that the governor is calling the CEO of the company saying, when are you going to get me back in service? You know, for New Orleans and for Entergy to say it's going to take us 3 weeks to get back in service, I just don't understand how a utility can look at a regulator or a customer and say it's going to take me 3 weeks in the 21st century to get you back into fundamental electric service. And so regulators and even customers are starting to say, and even frankly, shareholders are starting to say, let's look at undergrounding as an option. We're going to build resiliency. Oh, by the way, if we spend that dollar in a prudent manner, that goes into the rate base. So for an investor-owned utility that gets a recovery on a prudently spent dollar, that's a good thing. So they're improving resiliency, they're adding to the rate base, and it's a win-win, and they're making the community better and stronger and safer and more resilient. And oh, by the way, we should talk about aesthetics, and we're making it look much, much more attractive.
Talk a little bit about the cost to install underground versus just keep doing what they've been doing, like you've said. That includes constantly repairing and replacing damaged overhead lines. I mean, how expensive is it to maintain those overhead lines in the long run?
So we can go to empirical data. FERC, which is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, has Form 1. And on the FERC Form 1, which all utilities have to file, all investor-owned utilities need to file the FERC Form 1. You can look at the cost of overhead or underground transmission or distribution operations and maintenance. And the numbers are right there. One of the things that PDI Squared is going to do in 2022 is we're going to commission a white paper and probably do a webinar on this FERC Form 1 that talks about the lower cost of underground operations and maintenance. It's quantifiable, it's empirical, the data is there, and we're going to show the industry that the cost of O&M is less than the cost of overhead. I think what also is going to happen, Sharon, is that as utilities become more and more focused on underground, we're going to get better at our ability to perform underground operations and maintenance. Right now, most utilities are oriented and set up their processes, their supply chains, their work order processes, they're all oriented towards overhead construction and operations and maintenance. As we build more and more underground, and again, back to Pacific Gas and Electric, as a company like PG&E, you know, invest $15 to $30 billion and we get some more economies of scale, we're going to see some tremendous things happen. Dominion on the East Coast has been doing their strategic undergrounding program since, I believe, 2007. They've got 10 plus years. That might be a little late, but they've got 10 years of data on the total time of line restoration on the lines that they've undergrounded versus the lines that they used to have that were overhead. And they're making good progress. So this data is going to be available for people to be able to evaluate and look at from an O&M perspective. From a capital cost perspective, I maintain that the capital cost is coming down as well with advancements in material science, design, construction, and again, in some of these O&M practices that you can do on the front end. So you wouldn't even commission a distribution line in the future without benchmarking exactly what the condition of the cable is. That technology exists today, didn't exist 10 years ago. And these are things that we can employ and lower the cost. And like again, the life cycle cost or the total cost of ownership of an underground asset.
Now, does that data include what it costs businesses in those areas for lost time that they have? You said that in New Orleans area, that it could be like 3 weeks of before they get back up and running. I mean, from a personal standpoint, a personal customer, that's devastating. But to businesses, I can only imagine the dollar amounts that would factor.
Sharon, that's a great question. And when you say you can only imagine it, that's the sad thing is people only imagine it. And we need, as an industry, and frankly, regulators, they need to hold utilities to account on the gross domestic product lost during, for example, the 3 weeks that these customers are going to be out of service, whether they're commercial industrial customers or whether they're residential customers. But there's a GDP, gross domestic product, in a local community that when you don't have basic infrastructure like electricity, you lose that revenue stream. There's no commerce going on amongst people, amongst businesses. There's no revenue stream to the utility. There's no taxes paid during that period of time when there's an outage. And I don't think we have done an adequate job as the industry in quantifying that. So we need to stop thinking about, you know, is there a cost? And we need to start to quantify what that cost is and put that in the total cost of ownership. If I build an overhead line and I know over the course of the life of that asset that I'm going to have to replace that 3 years because of a hurricane or an ice storm or a lightning outage or car hit pole or whatever, and I have a lost revenue component to it and lost gross domestic product in my community, these things start to add up in ways that really contribute to a more fair analysis. You asked what the mission of PDI Squared is. I think PDI Squared wants a fair evaluation of the true cost of owning the asset, overhead and underground. And, you know, underground won't be the answer everywhere, but underground is going to be the answer in many, many more situations than heretofore we've seen in the industry.
Now, the PG&E announcement obviously put a face to this application. But there are projects going on all over involving undergrounding power lines. Our 2021 Trenchless Technology Project of the Year for new installation involved undergrounding power lines in Virginia. Can you talk a little bit about the undergrounding projects that are out there now or expected to be out there? Where are they happening and what kind of size are we talking about?
Okay, so aside from PG&E, I would start on the East Coast and I would start to work west from Virginia and from Florida, from Pepco, which is a Pepco holding company there in Washington, D.C. They had their big plug project, the power line undergrounding project. They were going to spend $1 billion on undergrounding distribution lines in the District of Columbia. The initiative, the Strategic Undergrounding Initiative at Dominion, is going to run for another few years, and they've got a few thousand more miles that they want to underground. All the major IOUs in the state of Florida are looking at storm secure-like pilot programs. I just was on a webinar the other day with Tampa Electric, and they've got their own initiative in hardening, which includes undergrounding. These are great opportunities for trenchless technology. There's lots of bodies of water that need to be crossed. There's lots of small property lines that need to be crossed, and nobody wants to open cut them. They'd love to be able to bore it or use trenchless technology. Moving from the East Coast, Wisconsin Energy is big in undergrounding, and there's a lot of opportunities there. And I think you're going to see in the next year or two, many other utilities start to embrace this. You could start, if you were a contractor today, I'd get in on the East Coast at Dominion, PHI, the big Florida utilities, Duke, which has got a footprint in the Carolinas and beyond, and certainly in Florida, and make sure that I'm starting to learn what their expectations are, what are the processes. There's a huge design and customer interface component with strategic undergrounding in particular. And how does that all work? And then get prepared for some of the opportunities that are going to emerge. So for a big HDD contractor, that might not necessarily mean they get involved in strategic undergrounding, but there are going to be other things that these utilities are going to do too, because they're developing much more of an underground mentality and culture at these utilities.
And when you say these projects, they're not talking about undergrounding everything. They're talking about strategic, specific hotspot areas that are prone to damage, correct?
Exactly. So that's why it's called strategic undergrounding. So they need to look at where are the lateral lines in most cases. These are distribution lines that take the longest time to restore, mm-hmm. that are the hardest to get to, that have got the most trees along the right of way. And those that historically they can go back and look at, they say these are the best candidates strategically for us to go after. You think about what PG&E is going to do. They want to spend $15 to $30 billion. They're going to do it over the course of the next few years. They're going to tackle only 10% of their transmission and distribution system. Well, where do they start? That's a huge question that really deserves quite a bit of study. Now, I wouldn't study it to death. I think they need to get in and start working right now to start to approve some of the methodologies they're going to use, not only for design, but for construction. But at some point in time, they need to be able to say with a high degree of confidence, these lines that we're undergrounding today, they make the most sense now because they're going to improve the resiliency of the line. They're going to make it easier for us to get to it. They're going to reduce the total time of restoration from, 7 or 8 or 9 days down to 3 to 5 days. It's going to make the lines safer to work on for our crews and things like that. So there's all sorts of parameters that are going to go into these decisions, but it will be strategic and it'll be an exciting opportunity for some in the industry.
What are some of the other key issues, obstacles or hurdles, whatever you want to call them, that the undergrounding sector faces in advocating this option to owners? And I guess, what can they and groups like PDI Square do to change owners' minds?
Well, I think we're in the process of changing people's minds. We're making more information available. We're backing it up with empirical data. A PG&E announcement's a big deal. There's rumored to be a couple of other really big multi-billion-dollar announcements on the horizon. And so we need to be steadfast in delivery of good, solid information and data. And we can make that available on the website or, make it available in webinars or videos or podcasts like what you're doing today, Sharon, and making this information available. And what happens is that starts to percolate up and percolate down. So, the new engineers that come into the industry today, they don't hear some old rule of thumb philosophy about overhead versus underground. They say, no, the industry is changing and we do have more underground opportunities. And young man, young woman, I want you to go study that. No more rules of thumb that, oh, no, we're just going to be flipping about it and we're just going to go overhead because that's the way my grandfather designed the system. Furthermore, it's trickling up. I was on a call with a very senior executive the other day. He said, Mike, we're going to a lot of industry meetings now. We're back to going to these industry meetings and we're starting to hear from the vendors that the cost of underground is coming down. When the C-suite starts to say that kind of thing, and they start to acknowledge that the cost of underground is coming down, and when young men and women that are coming into the industry say, hey, why do we have to do it that way? Why don't we look at underground? That's great. We're doing our job. We're doing the things that need to be done in the industry to start to communicate that message and to keep it going. And then what PDI Squared wants to do is continue to provide that information, that data, those resources to make those people that become, if you will, internal champions for underground within their organizations, within their utilities, we want to give them the tools that they need to go be successful within their own utilities.
We can definitely talk about this topic for a long time this afternoon. But finally, with undergrounding lines now becoming a nationwide hot topic, sort of, how do you see PDI Square's role changing? You got to be excited about the future now. I mean, you were excited before. Yeah. I can only imagine what your thoughts are now.
Well, thank you. We are excited. We think the needle is starting to move. We think that people are starting. When an executive tells me that they're starting to hear that the price of underground is coming down, when people start to talk about total cost of ownership and the life cycle cost of overhead versus underground, these are the things that we've been talking about in a rather limited manner because of COVID. We've been using webinars and podcasts like what you're doing today and videos and white papers and things like that. And we're excited. I think in 2022, it'll be more of the same. It'll be this FERC 1, a Form 1 white paper. We see some other webinars coming up. We are going to do a strategic undergrounding panel at DistribuTech, which is a big industry meeting that's coming up in January in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So in 2022, we will be able to start going to industry meetings again, and we will We will advocate for it from the dais when we're invited to speak, which is in many cases we're invited to speak. And if not, we'll just go and meet and greet. We'll talk to contractors. We'll talk to consultants. We'll talk to our utility friends. I was in this industry, Sharon, for 40 years and fortunate to know lots of men and women throughout the industry across the country. And going to these industry meetings, we'll run into them and say, "Hey, Mike, what are you doing these days?" "Well, I'm out. I'm advocating for undergrounding. Are you guys doing any undergrounding these days?" And then we take it from there. So I think 2022 is going to be a great opportunity, more of the same, except we're going to get to do it live and in person together.
Real quick, what is the website where people can get more information about PDI Squared?
Well, okay, again, it's the Power Delivery Intelligence Initiative, and it's PDI2.org, PDI2.org. And that'd take you right there. But if you use your preferred search engine and go to Power Delivery Intelligence Initiative, and you'll find a rich resource of good things to look at.
Well, thanks so much for this interesting conversation with this subject. I'm sure there will be more conversations about in the coming months and years. For the latest on the trenches technology industry, check out Trenches Technology Magazine, found in your mailbox, inbox, or online at trenchestechnology.com. This has been a Trenches Technology podcast. To hear more of my conversations about the trenches industry, go to trenchestechnology.com/podcast.